Support for this public radio podcast comes from the dairy families who own Cabot Creamery, five generations of farming and making naturally aged cheddar cheese in Vermont. On the web at go.coop.
Come over here, kid. Why, sir? You never know, you might have to cook for 20 guys someday. You see, you start out with a little bit of oil. You fry some garlic. Then you throw in some tomatoes, tomato paste, you fry it, you make sure it doesn't stick. You got to do a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? And a little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar. And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country tis of thee. I eat for social progress, I eat for victory.
Delicious.
Stay hungry, stay hungry, stay hungry.
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. I'm Michelle Anna Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Happy New Year. I was here in spirit last week, but not here in the flesh, as I was celebrating light, both in the form of Twelfth Night, January 6th, the Epiphany, and also the return of electric power to West County. Oh, it was such a nice thing. Hope you all, if you were hit by the storm, hope you fared well and are enjoying a nice start to the new year. One of the things that has become a tradition at the beginning of the year here in Wine Country is the Sonoma Valley Olive Festival, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight, and maybe we'll even talk to it. You never know. We've got Bruce Cohn, one of the hardest working men in the wine industry from Sonoma Valley. B.R. Cohn Winery, welcome back.
Well, good to be here, Michelle. It was always a good pleasure to be here with you.
I always love having you on Mouthful.
Well, thank you.
You know how to talk.
Thank you.
It's great. Also, I think, Deborah, you're coming back for at least your second visit, right?
No, actually, this is my first.
Really?
Yeah, so thank you.
Well, I'm glad
always
you're here.
Always happy to talk about olive oil.
I've talked to you about olive oil,
yes,
in so many locations.
Many years,
I was thinking it had been here as well. And, of course, you were with the Olive Press, located now at, what, Jacuzzi Family Winery?
Yes. In Sonoma, southern Sonoma.
And formerly in downtown Glen Ellen.
Yes.
Which, just to make things really confusing, that's still an olive mill, but it's now Fagoni's.
Yes, correct.
Okay. And then we have two chefs with us. We have Dana Jaffe, chef at Saddles. Welcome.
Good evening, Michelle.
And we also have Janine Falvo, a chef of Carneros Bistro.
Hi, Michelle.
Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So, how about to start out, let's just say, what is the Sonoma Valley Olive Festival, and how are you all participating? Anyone who wants to start can.
Well, it started a long time ago. Actually, in 1990, when I started making olive oil in Glen Ellen, I started a little olive oil festival at B.R. Cohn Winery, and we did it for several years. There was only about 20 producers of olive oil then, and it got to be too much for me to do and run the winery and the Doobie Brothers and everything else I was doing. So we turned it over to some really able folks in Sonoma, and they made it into a much bigger event.
And that lasts, what, 2 months? I mean, I know there's lots and lots of events that go on.
It starts the first weekend in December and ends around the end of February. But it really, the first event is one of the sweetest events, if I can say that, and that's the blessing of the olives.
I completely agree with you,
yes.
And you can say sweetest.
Can I?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, it's really something. To go to the blessing of the olives, if people haven't been, they should really try and make it. It's actually one of the most simple, basic, kind of reminds you of why we're here and why the olive's here, and it's such a great celebration.
Could you tell, sort of describe how...
Well,
it's
held at Sonoma's mission, and it's basically a blessing of the olives that also includes a few speeches by a couple of local luminaries. Ed Stolman, who actually is my business partner, is also the founder of the Blessing of the Olive, so he always has something to say. And Norton Buffalo comes, which is always a treat. So the music is great. The setting doesn't get any better than the Mission in Sonoma, so it's really nice.
And then momentum sort of builds to this big dinner that's coming up. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Well, the feast started out, whole celebration started out as a celebration of Sonoma Valley's second crop. And so here we are, we're just starting, or actually it's the middle of our harvest when the festival actually starts. But it goes through a series of lots of different events that I'm sure everyone here can speak about. But the feast is really about the founders who started it, and also a lot of the local chefs and purveyors really highlighting their craft and really showcasing the olive in every way, shape, and form, you know, from tapenade to olive oil drizzling, right down to the dessert that's made with olive oil.
Mm-hmm. And I think the first year of the feast, it was held at the barracks, I think, because I went to that one. Where is it held now?
It's at Ramekins Culinary School.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it has been for the last few years. It's a beautiful room, great setting.
About how many people can attend?
About 175 to 200.
Okay, so it's not huge.
No, it's actually fairly intimate.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite fun.
And our two chefs, Janine and Dana, are you both involved with the feast?
I am. I have the dessert course this year.
What are you doing?
Almost a dreaded course, I think.
No.
It's the best course.
I know. It's the grand finale.
But I'm gonna have some fun with it. I'm doing a white chocolate olive ice cream sandwich with coffee olive oil drizzled at the end. So.
Wow.
Coffee olive oil.
Wow. I want to hear about that one.
That's
you
really
have decaf
interesting.
For the people that can't
see. Yeah,
that.
I was going to say.
It's all calf, all the way.
Dana, are you going to be involved in that part of the festival?
We are. Settles is hosting the main event. I'm doing a grilled lamb with a turnip gratin, a tomato and crushed olive confit. And I believe I'm paired with one of Bruce's wines.
Yeah, our Olive Hill Estate Cab, the Arcone, should go really well with that lamb.
Mm-hmm. And that is one fine wine.
Well, thank
it
you.
It really is.
I have a bottle in my jacket over here for
really?
You.
Really? Oh, cool. Yeah. You know, I think out of all the cabs made in Sonoma County, that has always been one of the finest.
I appreciate that. You're 34, so we're working at it. Trying to refine that craft.
So is the event sold out?
Not quite yet.
Okay, so there are
tickets
and
available.
Is it on the 19th?
It is on the evening of the 19th. Starts at 6 o'clock.
Okay, and as always, towards the end of Mouthful, we will give you all the contact information necessary for you to both get tickets and other information about the festival. There will be websites, and also, get in contact with any of our guests. So get your pencils and your paper ready. Let's back up a little bit now, and I want to hear from each of you. Like, I want to hear about what you do at Saddles, for example, Dana. So would you just talk a little bit about what Saddles is and that sort of thing?
Saddles is the restaurant for MacArthur Place Inn and Spa, which is a little hotel we're a couple of blocks off the plaza in Sonoma. And we've been involved with the Olive Festival, I believe, for at least 7 years. And for me, it's always an opportunity to meet with all of my peers and see the new faces in town and spend a few hours with the old. And it's just, it's a lot of fun. You have everybody pitching in and helping plate everybody's food.
That's doing things like that. I love that part of it. It's been a while since I've done a lot of dinners like that, but I don't really do that sort of thing much
There's
anymore,
a lot of camaraderie.
That's really the fun part.
And a lot of creativity and a lot of community. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're really happy to be involved.
Mm-hmm. Now, with Saddles, can we talk a little bit about the name?
MacArthur Place is an old historic property in Sonoma that Susan Brangham developed along with Ramekins and the general's daughter. It was the Barris family home, and they've converted it a couple of times. We're currently in the middle of a remodel right now that will complete in April. And basically, the manor house and the barn and the servants' quarters were retained off of the old property and restored and converted into lodging. The barn itself houses our restaurant, and we did an addition a couple of years ago, but most of the building is original. And Suzanne's idea was to keep the flavor of the farm, which had been well known for producing trotters, horses. And so a lot of the old farm equipment and a lot of local treasures made their way in, and it has kind of a Sonoma Western motif. Mm-hmm. And we are a steakhouse. Mm-hmm. We've been voted the best steakhouse in Sonoma, I think, a couple of times.
Where do you get your meat?
We get our meat from wherever we can find the product that we want. We work with a lot of small artisan producers, you know, because mm-hmm. we've looked at, you know, we want to look at sustainable practices and, you know, but by and large, what we're looking for is the top product that we can find vendors that can supply us with the quantities we need. And because we're very busy, sometimes that gets difficult.
Mm-hmm. How many seats?
We generally can seat, I think, 160 in the restaurant. We also have conference services, and, you know, we're a full-service hotel. Mm-hmm. So we have all the, you know, we have room service and we have business conferences and several meeting rooms.
Mm-hmm. And that is Saddles at MacArthur Place.
That is correct.
Is it MacArthur Place Hotel or just MacArthur Place?
I think it's Inn and Spa, okay. I believe.
MacArthur
like
Place.
Thinking back to my cards.
Inn and Spa with Saddles Restaurant. Well, thank you, Dana. And Carnero's Bistro. Let's hear about Carnero's Bistro. I was just there. Oh, when was it? I think it was in November.
Oh, okay.
I was there for, actually, a memorial service, or memorial reception.
Celebration, I hope.
Well, it was...
of life.
Absolutely. Gertrude Shug.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm sure you're... Yeah. So we are located very close to MacArthur Place, right on Broadway, a little south of the plaza. And we're a local artisan bistro that is in the Lodge at Sonoma. And it's just, it's fun.
How long have you been there?
Almost 3 years.
Uh-huh. And what's the emphasis, the food emphasis?
Local, seasonal, whimsical, but definitely supporting all the local artisans mm-hmm. here in town. We live in a great place, mm-hmm. so.
And what do you find with both of you? Dana, you jump in on this question, too, if you feel so inclined. Do you find you're serving more people who are staying at the hotels or more locals or just a jumble?
I have a really nice mix uh-huh. of locals and guests at the hotel. We definitely see the same faces over and over, so we have a nice variety of locals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the locals are very supportive of the local businesses. I know that our mix is probably 40 to 50% local to other business.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we always look forward to things like the Olive Festivals to bring people into town mm-hmm. so they can celebrate Sonoma when the leaves are off the vines, you mm-hmm. know, and understand.
It's a wonderful time of year here.
Yeah, the
really
other things
beautiful.
There are to appreciate yeah. and things to do, mm-hmm. so.
Okay. Well, thanks very much. But one more question for you, Janine. What ingredients right now, other than olives, because that's what we're talking about, what uniquely seasonal ingredients, one or more, that are exciting you right now? Be curious about.
Right now, we have, as always, we have a 480-square-foot garden right on property. So for us right now, I'm pulling out of there different types of cauliflower, some cabbages, Brussels sprouts, some beets, and a little bit of arugula right now. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm using and mm-hmm. playing with a lot.
So those nice hearty wintry things.
Winter vegetables, yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. I would imagine in another month I'll be going nuts with root vegetables, but, you know, I'll be ready for spring.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, in another month we all will be, I'm sure. Okay, well, thanks very much. Take a little musical break. We'll be right back here on Mouthful. It's Mouthful. It's Michelle Jordan. It is KRCB. We are talking about the Olive Festival and all kinds of related things. And I want to talk about pressing olives, but real quickly, Martini Madness, is that happening the night before the feast?
No, it's over.
Oh, it's over.
Last night.
Okay, good. We don't have to talk. It's a crazy event. A lot of people drinking lots and lots and lots of martinis.
Actually, I misspoke. It was Friday night. It seems like it was yesterday.
Okay, I was thinking it was, yeah. I get those mixed up. But that's the Martini Madness is one of the, I think it's one of the events that people really associate with it. I was a judge once, and it was a difficult judging. Anyway, it's a topic for another time. Bruce.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. Biarracon olive oil.
Yes, yes.
You started the renaissance.
Well, in our area, at least.
California was, I mean, that's when I think of, when I was writing my book about oil and vinegar. Things really exploded in California about 2 months after the book came out. It was just a study in total bad timing. but it was really that estate, your estate oil made from Pichelene olives that seemed to be the first one to get. No, I mean, there was Lila, of course, Lila
Yeager.
Lila Yeager. She had made her oil, and it had gotten a little bit of press, but I really associate that renaissance and public notice of it with your Pichelene oil.
Well, we started in 1990 just making the estate oil from the trees, you know, at the winery.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we ignored them for years, just driving on the olives and, you know, oiling the driveway, so to speak. And my kids... four of them kept running the olive stains into the house on the carpets, and finally got an ultimatum from my wife at the time. Said, pick up the olives or buy me new carpets. So I picked up the olives and sent them down to Nick Shabika down in Modesto. Mm-hmm. And Shabikas were the only ones at that point really making extra virgin olive oil in a great quantities mm-hmm. in the state. And I didn't know anywhere else to take them, so we sent them down there before the olive press and other places started. But he called me one day and said, Bruce, he said, this is some really great olive oil. I said, yeah, well, I was told it was a rare olive, you know, Pichelene from the University of California. He says, yeah, he said, we don't see that. And sent it up, and we bottled it in this, you know, Italian glass bottle and etched. I had a lady from Sebastopol hand etch every bottle and sign
the
number.
Gorgeous. I have one.
Got up to $16 a bottle, so we had to quit. But anyway, it went out, and people were really hadn't had that quality olive oil in our area. And it's, of course, we'd only had, you know, about 8 tons mm-hmm. of olives, which makes about 27 gallons a ton. So, you know, a couple hundred gallons of oil, and it didn't go very far. But then we started buying olives and making it from around the state.
Mm-hmm.
It just took off, and then we started the vinegars and, you know, all the mm-hmm. food products.
You still make
that.
Some of the finest vinegars I've ever had. I love you.
Thank you.
Yeah, the Cabernet vinegar.
Yeah, it's all handcrafted vinegars, the Orleans style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where do you make those?
That's in Modesto, where mm-hmm. we bottle the olive oil, mm-hmm. and I hooked up with Classic Wine Vinegars down there, and they do all our packaging and bottling, mm-hmm. and Wally makes great vinegars, and... We do it. We send him our old French oak barrels, mm-hmm. and he makes it in the. You know, we have Cabernet vinegar, Chardonnay, two champagne vinegars, one with raspberry, mm-hmm. fresh raspberries infused, and now we've got pear infused champagne or Chardonnay vinegar. And
now that one I haven't had.
It's really good. Yeah. Great summertime salad dressings.
Uh-huh. Very nice label, too, done by a friend who did some of my books, Michelle Stong.
Michelle's great, isn't
yeah.
she?
Yeah, yeah wonderful artist. Really wonderful. So where are you making your oil? So you've been making it now 17 years?
Yeah, 17 years.
17 years. So where are you making it now?
When I was three, I started that. No. The olive oils, we pressed at McAvoy. For a few years, we pressed at the Olive Press for many years. Kind of been going around, bouncing mm-hmm. around from one place to the other, trying to find the best quality and best presses. And mm-hmm. a lot of these presses are changing. The Italian presses are getting real high quality oils from shaving the olives and spinning them in centrifuges now. Mm-hmm. So there's very little heat, if any, at all. And that's what we want for the cold pressed, mm-hmm. so that, as they call it.
Mm-hmm. And so where are you doing yours now?
Last year we did it at
Maybe
Fagoni.
That's not the right way to say it.
We did it at Fagoni's in mm-hmm. Glen Ellyn, which was the mm-hmm. Olive Press. And a couple years before that, we were doing it over at McAvoy's, and before that at the Olive Press in Glen Ellyn, mm-hmm. before it changed hands.
Mm-hmm. And how do you notice a big change depending on where?
Yes. The machinery and how they handle the olives has a lot to do with the end result.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, picking is the most important part of making olive oil. When you pick, so important.
Mm-hmm. And also how quickly, right? How quickly you
press
after picking.
Well, getting them to the mill, yeah. Uh-huh. But really, because olives aren't like grapes. They don't. The whole vineyard doesn't ripen. The whole grove mm-hmm. doesn't ripen at the same time. And what you have to do is kind of judge when you have some green, some overripe, and some ripe, and you mix it. And when you get that just right, you get just the right, low acid and the right amount of flavor mm-hmm. and not too much bitterness in the palate. And it's quite an art to pick at the right time.
Mm-hmm. When did you pick this year, or in 2007?
We picked about a month after harvest was, our grape harvest was very erratic. Mm-hmm. We started very early, like the earliest. I've been there 35 years. And I think this was the earliest harvest we've ever done. Started September 7th.
Uh-huh.
And we picked Cabernet. I mean, if you could believe that. Before, 2 weeks or 3 weeks before the Chardonnay was even
ready.
And then all of a sudden it slowed down.
Uh-huh.
And we were picking way late at the very end into almost November, end of October. So it was the longest harvest we've had for years.
Uh-huh.
And the olives came about 30 days after.
Mm-hmm.
For us.
Mm-hmm.
But it's different. It's all site-specific.
Sure. And when do you release your 07? Are you selling it yet?
No. It's uh-huh. just kind of settling. We let mm-hmm. it settle, and it'll be bottled shortly. It'll probably be out in March.
Mm-hmm. And the best place to get it, is it at the winery?
Well, the estate oil uh-huh. is only sold at the winery.
Okay.
Obviously, we have organic oil,
mm-hmm.
and we have a EVO, just a regular blend of Saviano, Manzanillo, and Mission oils, olives we buy.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have our bread dipper, which is mm-hmm. balsamic and herbs that I made up, and the extra virgin olive oil. And there's a whole variety. Well, now we have actually a unfiltered oil, which is very popular.
Mm-hmm.
We don't filter it at all, and it's still got solids in it and has a lot of flavor that mm-hmm. way. And then we have a one infused oil. Basil and garlic mm-hmm. oil infused, and that's been very popular mm-hmm. for cooking.
Okay, so Deborah, let's bring you in. You're still called the Olive Press?
Yes, absolutely.
And what made you decide to leave the facility that you built there in Glen Ellyn and move, 15 miles southeast?
Exactly,
like
10 miles.
10 miles,
exactly,
okay.
10 miles on the same road. I know it's kind of crazy, but as you know, we were in Jack London Village in Glen Ellyn for 11 years and basically outgrew the space. We just were looking into expanding the business, growing it, getting more exposure, and the foot traffic just wasn't there. We were given this great opportunity, really. Fred Klein approached us and said he was going to be building this beautiful winery across from Klein Cellars to house his premium brand, and we said sure. So we kind of disappeared for about 6 months there. We moved in January of 07 and didn't open our doors again until July of 07. So, but in Glen Ellen, we were the Sonoma County's first olive oil mill. And as you know, I don't know if you remember, but we were on that fateful trip in 1995 together.
Yeah.
In the south of France. Little did we all know, but that's when one night at dinner, Ed Stallman said, we should, after visiting an olive oil mill, we should do this in Glen Ellen. So 12 of us annied up. We came back and we wrote Ed a check, and he flew off to Italy and bought Pirelli, what was then state-of-the-art olive oil equipment, and moved into Glen Ellen, and since have expanded. And we've opened a second store in Napa also.
Now, are the same people from then still involved?
No, actually, Ed and myself, we've both bought the rest of the partners out, and the two of us now own it.
Oh, okay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a lot to bite off.
Yes.
Do you still serve as sort of a community press? Because that was part of what you did.
Yes, we were the first to actually start a community press. I don't think we could get rid of the community press if we wanted to. I think there'd be an uprising or something. We only do it 2 days a year. It's always the Sunday after Thanksgiving and then 2 weeks later. And it's where we open our doors to the general public. And it started out as a fun way for people who own, you know, one or two trees, who have them in their yard, to bring their buckets of olives. It turns into a real family affair, and relatives come, and everybody has a great time, and they pick the olives and bring them to us, and we throw everybody's olives in together, and whatever the ultimate yield is, whatever percentage you brought in terms of weight, you get back in olive oil.
And does it all get mixed together?
Pretty much.
So yeah. Talk a little bit about the taste, and anybody else who's tasted, y'all jump in if you want. What kind of oil does it seem to make?
Out of the community press?
Yes.
Well, I call it Heinz 57 olive oil because it's every varietal mm-hmm. you could ever imagine, and some completely unidentifiable ones, mm-hmm. right down to fruitless olives that really want a fruit. So it turns out, you know, the tiniest little olives in the world really are just, we're grinding a few pits there, but everything from, you know, the average California varietal to now it's turned out to be such a big event that there's been a couple of community presses where at the end of the day, we start at 10 o'clock in the morning and end at 3. I've taken in 11 tons. That's a lot of buckets of olives.
And what, can you describe the flavor at all, or even just the flavor from this year's?
You know, it's different every single year. And honestly, I say this every year, but this is true. This is my favorite this year. It came out beautiful. And I think it's because out of all these years, and I consider us sort of educators of when you harvest to the general public, we've been talking for so many years about when is the right time to harvest, and what degree of green and burgundy and black do you really need to make a balanced olive oil versus, you know, milling all green or all black. So, you know, I kind of talk a lot to people about the varying degrees of ripeness and the balancing that you get by bringing in all three of the colors, so to speak. So this year's is wonderful. It came out great.
I have to try it. You said that when you opened the olive press 11 years ago, you had bought the state-of-the-art equipment, Pirelli horizontal decanter. What kind do you have now? What's the latest thing?
We still have it.
So you got the same kind of equipment?
Well, I figure if it isn't broke, don't fix it. You know, we mm-hmm. are, you know, we're literally the most awarded California olive oil company in the state of California. So I'm pretty close with my equipment. I'm pretty happy with the way I think we've learned. It's taken us many years, but we've learned how to make really good extra virgin olive oil based on what we have. Is it, do I push buttons and a computer screen comes up? No, and that's state of the art now.
I see. Okay.
So yeah, there's technology has changed slowly but surely over the years, but basically I think once you learn your equipment well and you educate your customer on when they should be harvesting. You know, really, it's the grower that brings in. If they bring in fresh, really sound fruit, we can make really good olive oil.
So there you go. You heard it from Deborah Rogers on Mouthful. It's Mouthful. It is KRCB. Thanks for sticking with us. We are talking about the Sonoma Valley Olive Festival. Lots of events coming up. The big Feast of the Olive Dinner is this coming Saturday, January 19th. I'm looking at the menu. Let's see here. What should I tell you about? Olive oil braised Burgundian escargot.
Wow.
That sounds really good. There's a real difference with...
You need samplers.
Yeah, that would be nice. Honey roasted shallots, garlic confit. That's from the Grill and the Fig. There's a martini and oyster... Oh, no, from Meritage Martini Oyster Bar and Grill, Carlo. It's not saying what he's doing as a first course yet, but he's a good cook. Wild shrimp, hearts of palm and asparagus with Meyer lemon, olive oil aioli, citrus salad, and California Ocetra caviar. That's coming from the chef at Fairmont Sonoma Mission Inn. Norman Owens from Cafe La Haye is doing timbale of duck confit with farro risotto wrapped in Savoy cabbage. There will be an orange and olive emulsion and a fennel salad. You get the idea. Always interested to see what somebody's doing with Pinot Noir. This year it is Larson Family Winery Pinot Noir paired with grilled yellowfin tuna with Yukon gold potato, fennel, and Niçoise olive ragout. There are still some tickets available. The end, is it the last thing?
The finale is, yeah, it's, what do we say, February 17th?
And what's it called?
Correct. Vino Livo.
Vino Livo, yeah.
Vino Livo. And
it's
what?
A dinner, and it's at Carneros.
Yeah, it's at the Lodge at Sonoma.
Okay.
And what we have done the last couple of years is everybody comes and pours their wine, and all the restaurants around town have little bites of food.
So it's a walk-around sort of thing. Now, I remember, it's been a few years, but there's been the big two-day event in the square. Is that not happening anymore?
Well, that I think you're talking about the Mercado.
Yes.
It used to be a tented event on the plaza. Yes, they gave that up a couple of years ago, and last year it became the Passport Weekend. So it as opposed to getting everybody under one roof, you buy your ticket and you travel.
I think that's a good thing to have happened. It was fine, but it got really crowded.
It was crazy.
It was so popular.
It was wet and cold also.
Yeah, and then
that tent.
Inside, it was, if you had even like a shred of claustrophobia.
Yeah.
And one thing I always liked about it is they sold olive trees there.
They did.
I have two of them.
I think that's a really nice thing.
I have one Kalamata from that event, one Kalamata olive tree from that.
So now it's, and when is Passport Weekend?
That's the 23rd, I believe. That's the February 23rd is that weekend, yeah.
And does that theme still carry through, the theme of the olive?
Yes. It has a lot to do with the wineries. I know
probably we host.
You host something, Bruce.
We do a dinner usually. And, you know, we try and pair all Sonoma food products in our menus. Mm-hmm.
Who's your chef these days? Do you work with different people?
Different, yeah. They pair us every year. It's a different chef. But the theme is trying to do, you know, all Sonoma County products. And, of course, the olive oils and the wines from Sonoma Valley.
Mm-hmm. I think if you go online to the Olive Festival website, you'll find the listing of what everybody offers, and it's kind of fun to see what, you know, as you map your day out, what each winery and each location has to offer.
Mm-hmm. And it's a nice thing for both locals and people who are coming to Sonoma Valley, Sonoma County at this time of year. So if you're listening from somewhere far away and you have a trip happening before the end of February, you want to take a look. This one's easy to remember, olivefestival.com. There you go. You don't even need a pencil to write that down. Olivefestival.com will show you all of the different options that you have to celebrate Sonoma County's second crop. It's a really nice thing to do at least once. You know, at least once, because it's becoming an increasingly, not just an important crop, but it's something as we get, and you guys weigh in on with your own opinions on this, but from my point of view, agriculture is constantly at risk. Partly as we get discovered, one of the inevitable things of discovery is more and more people want to live here. Land values go up, we know that, and some people want to grow houses instead of olive trees. So I think one of the things that I think the Olive Festival has really succeeded in doing is highlighting that we do have this other thing that is pervasive throughout the county after the wine is all done.
Another crop. And, you know, land prices are so expensive now for farmland that it's increasingly difficult. Plus, the development that's gone in squeezing agriculture and but still Sonoma County is a great diversified place for all kinds of crops. Mm-hmm. But I think wine obviously and olive oil now becoming a real focus in Sonoma County.
Mm-hmm. And I think the more people both locally and nationally who understand any one of our crops is going to help it remain healthy.
Exactly.
So support your Olive Festival. Bruce, I can't let you get away with being on Mouthful without getting you to talk just a little bit about what it was like when you first got the property that was to become B.R. Cohn, and even a little bit before that, back in your days in Sebastopol, Forestville, with your family raising goats. Because it was so different then.
Well, we started out in 1957 in the Russian River Valley on Martinelli Road. My dad left Chicago and took a big left turn and bought a farm, and we started a goat dairy. It was the first goat dairy in Northern California. My mother made feta goat's cheese in these 25-pound sacks in the pantry, and I ended up milking 115 goats twice a day by hand, which I thought we were just going to hunt and fish up there. It was supposed to be a recreational ranch, but it turned out to be a working dairy. And so when we moved on to Santa Rosa and then back to San Francisco, I got involved in the music business, then back to Glen Ellen when I could afford to buy my own property. I bought this ranch, which I named Olive Hill, after the olive trees.
And those trees were planted, what, in the 1870s?
I think about 1870s. Uh-huh. Not sure, except we know the house was built in 1920, and they cut a bunch of big trees down around it because the stumps are still there, so we knew they're pretty old. Mm-hmm. When they cut the trees down for the house. But it just became, you know, music business retreat for me, being on the road with the Doobie Brothers for 150 cities a year. But I inherited the olive grove, and I inherited 14 acres of grapes that the previous owner had planted, and it had been a dairy, so I felt kind of right at home on the property because mm-hmm. it had been a dairy in the past. And we went ahead and began planting more grapes, and I started the winery finally after selling grapes to Ravenswood and August Sebastiani and, you know, all the old timers, and finally started my winery, and then started the Olive Oil Company in 1990 with Greg Reisinger, mm-hmm. who was my partner, and he was very active in forming the whole olive coalition in Sonoma County and putting a
really
lot of rules and regulations in, and was very active. Mm-hmm. And it was fun. It was fun starting it and seeing it all grow. Uh-huh. It's a big business now.
So you were up here. Back to when you first bought that property, you were here when there were no traffic jams.
when there was no traffic lights.
There
was one light all the way to San Francisco when I started. I would drive down Arnold Drive, mm-hmm. and there was one stoplight. Yeah.
When did
way.
You really know? Is there a point in time that you remember that was sort of the watershed? Different people say. I know that, say, David Viviani, for example, he names the first gas crisis in the 70s when he saw it shift, because suddenly people realized they could go on vacation from San Francisco, pop up to Sonoma for a day and use less than a tank of gas. That's when he saw it change. For me, I noticed the change when Christo did the Running Fence. It's the first traffic jam. I'd already been living here quite a while. So I'm just wondering if you have a similar moment.
Well, David would know because, you know, he started the Cheese Factory, which was a huge tourist destination on the square, on the plaza in Sonoma, and they were having 500,000 visitors a year years ago. And I didn't start getting into visitor with the tasting room until about 1986 when we started having our tasting room. And it's just grown steadily since my recollection being, you know, 86 for visitors anyway, coming to my winery. And it's just steadily. We started in the milk barn as our tasting room. At, you know, it was the dairy milk barn, and now we're. I gave up my house, which is a nice old farmhouse, and now that's the tasting room. Now we've outgrown. We're blowing out walls and putting in more bar space, and it's just in the summer. You know, from about May to November, it's just you can't get in the door.
And you have you've also made a name for the winery with some big events that you have. You do the big benefit in the fall. There's
the charity concert.
Yeah, there's always somebody, Willie Nelson or somebody.
We try and get all great. Whoever will come and play for free and I can get a favor out of. But
got any surprises coming up this year?
There'll be some, but I don't
know.
They don't know who. There'll be a surprise to them when they hear they're playing. I just have to start making calls next week, actually. But we had a great show last year with Huey Lewis and the Doobie Brothers and Tower Power and Cold Blood and Three Dog Night and Canned Heat and Taj Mahal and Los Lobos. It was quite a day of two days of music. Mm-hmm. We raised over $300,000 for local charities.
And is it a variety of local charities?
Mostly children's charities in Sonoma County. We do donate because of the Doobie Brothers affiliation and mine with the National Veterans Foundation. We've donated over $2 million to the vets as well. But, yeah, it's fun and a lot of hard work, but it pays off with being able to support the community.
Now, is information about everything, all this that you do, from your olive oil to the charity concert and your wines and all that, can you get all that information at one website?
brcohn.com, that easy.
B-R-C-O-H-N.com, brcohn. Thanks so much for coming back. It's always...
My pleasure.
Great to have you.
Good to see all my neighbors here, too. I don't see them very often. It's nice to come to Santa Rosa and see my Sonoma neighbors.
Mouthful's really good for that, a meeting place. Deborah,
yes.
How do people, what's the website for the Olive Press?
It's theolivepress.com.
Easy.
Easy.
It is easy for you. And the location?
Is 24724 Arnold Drive, and that's in the Southern Sonoma Valley, or the gateway to Sonoma Valley if you're coming north. And the phone number is 707-939-8900.
It's 939-8900. And Bruce, we should have said that you're located there in Glen Ellen on Highway 12, not far from the Red Barn.
Yeah, we're on Madrone and Highway 12, basically.
Okay. You want to give a phone number?
707-938-4064.
938-4064 for B.R. Cohn Winery. And Janine Falvo, Carneros Bistro. Best way for people to get information?
We are at 707-931-2042.
That's 931-2042.
Yes.
Website?
Carneros Bistro and Wine Bar.
Okay, Carneros Bistro and Wine Bar .com. Thank you. And Dana, Saddles.
Website would be MacArthurPlace.com, and our phone number is 707-933-3191.
933-3191. Okay, thank you very much. Thanks to all of you.
And thank you.
I really wish you the absolute best with the Feast of the Olive and all the other events with this year's Olive Festival.
Well, thanks for having us on.
You betcha. I really appreciate you driving over the mountain to get here. And I'm glad that we were able to bring you nice weather to do that. Yeah, you know that we started the new year with some new features here on Mouthful. In just a few minutes, we will be having our review from book review from our new critic, Laura Hager. We are also going to continue with the tradition of Good Cook's Pantry. Normally, these will be pre-recorded, but tonight I'm going to treat you to a live one. We are talking about one of my favorite ingredients, salt. Misinformation about it abounds in cookbooks, online recipes, television shows, and newsletters about health. Also on so-called experts' websites. Let's try to sort it out. The most common confusion is between table salt and sea salt. Sea salt comes from seawater, but most sea salt is made using the exact same method as what we call table salt. First, seawater is evaporated in enormous ponds. When it is dry, it is harvested and stored in huge mountains of salt, such as the one you see on the east side of San Francisco Bay whenever you fly in or out of the Bay Area. This salt is refined to remove impurities and trace minerals, and then it's dried in a kiln. The dried salt is packaged under many labels. It may be simply table salt. When iodine is added, it is called iodized table salt. If a retailer wants to call it sea salt, it is so labeled and sold in health food stores. Did you get that? Table salt and sea salt often come from the exact same pile of salt. This distinction is important because you'll pay more for sea salt, even when it is the exact same product as the less expensive stuff. There's no benefit to buying this type of sea salt. The salt, no matter its name, is a hard cube that dissolves slowly and is difficult to grab between your fingers. There's also a lot of confusion about kosher salt. Kosher salt is used to make certain foods kosher. Meats, for example, are covered with salt to extract any blood that remains in the tissues. The large crystals of kosher salt achieve this more efficiently than small cubes of table salt. Any kosher salt does this well. In cooking and seasoning, though, the type of kosher salt is crucial. Some, such as Morton's, is made of hard, flattened cubes that are fused together. This salt dissolves slowly and may leave striations of salt in dough and other baked goods. Diamond Crystal kosher salt is made of dry crystals. They're shaped like tiny pyramids. Technically called hopper crystals, this salt has thin walls and dissolves quickly, leaving a trail of flavor in its wake. In baking, it is evenly distributed through dough or batter. Malden sea salt is produced similarly in England. It's a wonderful salt with slightly larger crystals than diamond crystal. In this country, though, it's too expensive to be one's primary cooking salt. When it comes to the chemical properties, there's little difference between table salt, refined sea salt, and kosher salt. The important difference is in the structure and behavior of the crystals. But what about those colorful sea salts, expensive specialty salts, and condiment salts that so many chefs rave about? Some health professionals believe that the trace minerals found in solar-dried sea salt are beneficial. You'll find this type of salt sold as Celtic sea salt, selgree, fleur de sel, and sea crystals. The important thing to look for in any of these salts is that they are both solar-dried and unrefined. These salts are interesting, but they're best used as finishing salts. They dissolve slowly and provide an enticing crunch between the teeth. Their flavor is delicate, round, and full in the mouth. But there's no benefit to using them in general cooking because their unique properties vanish when they dissolve. Now, what about salt and health? It's a complex issue, best addressed when we have a bit more time. However, salt is essential to our well-being, and without it, we die. And without it, life is a bit tasteless. If someone has a medical condition that requires them to limit their salt intake, that's a personal situation. I would neither suggest that anyone disregard advice nor suggest that anyone take such advice if it were not intended for them. Be sure to tune in to Mouthful next week for another episode of The Good Cook's Pantry. I'm writing about the book I read. I have to sing about the book.
The Lost Ravioli Recipes of Hoboken is a book about one woman's longing for family, tradition, and a sense of place. I know the title sounds like a Saturday Night Live satire on foodie preciousness. I mean, what's next, the Bologna Diaries of Whittier? But if you've ever gotten a recipe from an aged relative that read, "Mix some sugar, butter, and a few eggs and stir till just right," you'll have some idea of the frustration that led food writer Laura Shinone on a multi-year transatlantic quest for a ravioli recipe. The recipe in question belonged to her great-grandmother, Adalgisa Shinone, one of the millions of impoverished Italian immigrants who moved to America at the turn of the last century. Adalgisa brought with her the cuisine of Liguria, better known as the Italian Riviera. While the Ligurian coast has always been relatively prosperous, Shinone's family came from its impoverished mountainous interior, the sort of beautiful but desperate place that makes boarding a boat to a place you've never seen seem like a good idea. Shinone's search for the coveted recipe is complicated by the fact that she hasn't spoken to anyone in her father's fractious Italian family for over 20 years, thanks to a dispute a generation back over the family plumbing business. Her quest helps mend this rift, and she ultimately gets the recipe from a long-lost cousin who lives, unbeknownst to Shinone's parents, just a few doors down the street from them. The problem is the recipe lists Philadelphia cream cheese as one of the main ingredients, which strikes Shinone as a weird New World adulteration, like ravioli from a Jewish deli. Obsessed with finding the original recipe, she goes back to the tiny Ligurian town of Lumarzo in search of the real deal. What she learns ultimately is that food is rooted in a certain time and place, and that authenticity is a slippery concept. Recipes from the old world, dependent on local ingredients, never translate exactly to the new world. In Genoa, for example, she discovers the cheese that her grandmother probably used in her ravioli, a delicate Ligurian farm cheese called Prescenzua. But when Shinone tries to make this cheese by hand back in New Jersey, it tastes, surprise, surprise, just like Philadelphia cream cheese. At the beginning of the book, an Italian friend warns her about the futility of the American desire to recreate authentic regional cuisines. Authenticity is fragile precisely because it is natural, spontaneous, and automatic. The second you have to think about it, it becomes something else, something pretentious and forced. At first, when Shinone stands in her New Jersey kitchen making her great-grandmother's ravioli, she feels the same way. She works for months to master the almost lost art of hand-rolling homemade pasta for ravioli. All the Italians she knows use pasta machines. Most of the 24 recipes in the book, for ravioli, focaccia, and cheese torta, feel equally arduous, things to be admired rather than attempted. But for Shinone, these recipes are like a bridge, fragile as a strand of fresh pasta, to a time and place more real and grounded than our own. This is Laura Hager for Mouthful.
Church last Sunday, so I could sing and pray. But something quite unusual happened on that day. My church, it started right on time, just like it does without a doubt. And everything was all just fine, except when it came time to let us out. You know, the preacher, he kept preaching. He told us, "I have one more thing to say, children, before you think of leaving. You better think about the judgment day." Now, everyone got nervous, because everyone was hungry too. Everyone was wondering what was the next thing he would do. And the preacher, he kept preaching. He said, "Now I'll remind you, if I may, you all better pay attention, or I might decide to preach all day." Everyone was getting so hungry. Old one started feeling ill, and the weak one started passing out. The young ones, they could not sit still, and the preacher
preacher's voice rose higher. I snuck up to the balcony and I crept into the choir. And I begged them, brothers, sisters, help me please. I said, when I give you a signal, I said, when I raise up my hands, won't you please join with me together? Praise the Lord, I have a plan. And the preacher, he kept preaching. Long is a struggle, hard to fight. And I prayed, Father, please forgive me. And then I stood up, and with all my might, I sang to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner, now let's go.
Mouthful is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan. Lawrence Alberti is Mouthful's engineer. For more information about Mouthful, send an email to mouthful@michelleannajordan.com. That's Michelle with one L. You can also download Mouthful's free podcast from krcb.org or from iTunes.
Every woman, a child and man, is saying to the Lord, let praises be. It's time for dinner now, let's go.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Acura, featuring the 286-horsepower TL Type S with a solar-sensing climate control system. Learn more at Acura.com.